a quick outline of how my talk's going to go. I'm going to give some background on the project and then go through the challenges of implementation, everything from designing the framework to implement this project to maintaining participation. And then, as Stacy said, I'm also going to recap on some of the big lessons learned and also broader applications that came out of this project unexpectedly. So this talk is centered on our experiences with pertussis active surveillance, which was a project in collaboration with Minnesota and CDC. The objectives were to increase recognition, testing, and reporting on all suspect pertussis cases in two counties. And this differs from previous or regular methods of pertussis surveillance that tends to be a little bit more passive. And especially in our state, I think 90%+ of the cases we heard about were reported to us through the laboratories. And even then, it was only the positive cases, none of the suspect or what we consider probable. We also hope to enhance surveillance, improve the understanding of the epidemiology of pertussis, and observe the effect of Tdap vaccine promotion in targeted areas. We're a little over halfway through the project, so analysis of the above objectives has yet to be completed. The project was focused in two counties, Ramsey and Dakota. They're two of the seven counties that make up the metro area. They together have a diverse geographic, socioeconomic, ethnic, and racial distribution. Dakota County actually goes all the way up into where the Twin Cities are, Minneapolis-St. Paul, down into some more of the rural areas of Minnesota. So it covers urban, suburban, and rural areas. And our goal was to recruit all healthcare facilities in those two counties. We initiated the project by convening an advisory board comprised of members of the community representing schools, colleges, local public health agencies, hospitals, and clinics. Included on these were individuals such as the medical directors of the two counties and also some of the laboratory directors from the participating, or the HMOs that sit in Minnesota. This advisory board was instrumental in providing guidance on the practical implementation of the project. I underlined practical in my notes because we wanted to make sure we had a project that the healthcare facilities would actually be able to implement as opposed to something that we designed that's not really practical in the real world. The advisory board also worked heavily on developing materials for the project. For instance, the board's work resulted in using one simple form that was provider-friendly. It was actually developed by providers and tested by providers. And this acted as the report form that they would report to us all the suspect cases that came through their clinic. We tried to make it as simple as possible. And then actually on the back of the form, we had the criteria for testing. We had how to test, treatment information. So we had the entire matrix of prophylaxis and also how to report it. Another example includes the main motto of the project, which was the think, test, treat, stop transmission motto. The advisory board, again, there were quite a few clinicians on this board. They said that it was incredibly important to have something that we could hang up in the facilities that not only would remind them of the project, but also remind them of to even test for pertussis. And this is what it looks like. Given the time of this talk, I didn't have time to put all the material we developed for this project in the slides, but I brought most of it with me. So if any of you would like to see it afterwards, I have a lot. This is what the report form, this is the final report form that we came up with. And again, it's been pretty well received. And again, the back of it had a lot of information. It also acted, we provided free testing for clinics if they chose. And instead of having to have one form that you're sending to MDH to report and then another specimen submission form, this form also acted as the report form and the specimen submission. So they fill this out, they put it in with the specimen, and they send it off to us. And that was all that needed to be done. Okay. Thought that was out of order. All right. So designing, once we got the framework kind of put in place, we did a pilot phase. It lasted a little bit under a year that included 23 clinics. The sites were provided with an educational presentation, material, and training. From these initial trainings, both the presentation itself and materials that accompanied the projects were refined. So, now we needed to recruit the rest of the healthcare facilities in the two counties. The way we originally did this was to send out a mailing to each facility with information about the project, about pertussis, about Tdap, how to do a nasal pharyngeal specimen. We actually included a DVD and VHS tape, and also information on our immunization registry. Then we patiently waited for clinics to call and sign up. And we waited, and we waited, and we waited. We received very little response, and only actually a few facilities called wanting to participate. I think it was less than a handful. So we needed a more active approach. The two counties utilized a combination of emails, phone calls, and site visits to each healthcare facility. Now, due to the difference in staffing, Dakota was able to physically meet with all the facilities as a primary mode of recruitment. Whereas Ramsey, which has twice the number of facilities, had to rely more heavily on emails and phone conversations for recruitment. And there were only two people in these counties doing this, so there are one in each county. So it wasn't like they had a team of staff recruiting each and every single one of these facilities. Regardless, both coordinators identified champions at the sites. These champions were instrumental in successful recruitment. Champions range from clinicians to clinic managers to lab personnel. So I think a lot of people tend to think the champions are going to be the clinic managers. This wasn't always the case. It really ranged across the staff. Once a champion was identified, the next step was to acquire participation by all the site staff. There were key elements that helped in this full recruitment. We provided in-services with food and CME. Presentations included information on the signs and symptoms of pertussis, proper specimen collection, treatment and prophylaxis, and also to describe the protocol for testing and reporting. Especially helpful was the inclusion of the sound of the cough, but at different ages. So we had it from infants to adults. We also had a demonstration of how to do nasal pharyngeal specimen collection. And this had an immediate impact, as literally we had about a handful of clinics that they were doing nasal pharyngeal specimens by going straight up the nose instead of straight back. And so right as we were giving the presentation, we went ahead and were able to help educate a lot of the providers. We also offered free testing, and truly free testing. Minnesota Department of Health Public Health Laboratory provided both the PCR testing, but we also provided all the materials needed for that and a courier to get it from the clinic to MDH. With the cost of pertussis PCR ranging anywhere from $100 to $400, this was quite a large incentive. Also, flexibility. Having flexibility within the project for both the lab and paper processes was important. Some facilities wanted to stick with their own labs just because of logistics. Others did use our free testing. And then others used a combination for their uninsured versus insured populations. Sites used different staff for processing report forms to MDH. And sites needed the capability to include their affiliated clinics, which sometimes sat out of our two-county area. Some of the clinics were... It would have been the only way they were able to come on board was to bring the other affiliated clinics because to change protocol in one clinic and not the other ones just was not feasible. We also provided, like I said, some educational material, quick references for providers, and fact sheets and posters for the public. So now that we have the facilities enrolled, we face the challenge of maintaining participation. And the majority of our facilities were actually were enrolled in 2007, so we are definitely moving into how to maintain that. We follow up with non-reporters if they haven't reported within a quarter, and the non-reporter being the clinic itself, if we haven't heard of any even suspect cases. We offer refresher courses, which is especially helpful at sites where there's been significant staff turnover. We develop new material on an as-needed basis and translate it in several different languages. Two examples of this are the schools made us aware that our fact sheet that previously to this project we had sent out to parents when there were school outbreaks or just information that needed to be sent out was really not parent-friendly. It wasn't short enough, and that we needed a new tool for that. And so we did develop a parent-friendly fact sheet, and we had it translated into different languages. The other feedback we got from both clinics and the schools was that we were pushing pertussis awareness so much among the provider community, but that we had also needed to then partner with the public themselves. And so we developed some really pretty cough posters to catch the eyes, especially I think of teenagers, and just to kind of, more than anything, just get pertussis, the word out there and the thought out there, so that as providers were testing more, it wouldn't be quite as much of a challenge. We also send electronic quarterly updates. These updates include updates on the project, but also tips and reminders of other issues around pertussis. And then we continue to contact champions at each site by integrating with other projects. We integrate with IPI visits or influenza sentinel site surveillance and other special projects. All of these activities encourage communication between the county coordinators and the site staff, which in turn aids in keeping the project at the forefront of the site's priorities. We have 95 sites that are currently enrolled out of 150 eligible sites in Dakota and Ramsey County. Not all the sites are at 100% reporting level, but clinics that tend to be the best at reporting and testing are clinics that are larger than just one physician. And our thought is that they probably have more of a system of reminders built in. In some instances, only one or two physicians will report from a clinic. However, they tend to be the ones that came to our in-services. And we really have healthcare facilities that are across the board. We did run into some biases of clinics saying, oh, you want to go to our pediatric clinic? And we're like, no, we really want the family medicine. We want internal medicine. And we were able to achieve that. Okay, so this slide is a descriptive, or as I like to call it, that's interesting slide. We're still too early on to be able to provide much in the way of statistical analysis. So just to see what we would see, we looked at the percent change from 2006 to 2007 in some pretty defined areas. So as background, pertussis incidence in Minnesota stayed relatively the same between 2006 and 2007. We're sitting right around 300 cases. Knowing that the other five of the seven metro county areas, so remember Dakota and Ramsey are part of a seven metro county, and there's five other counties, obviously, seven minus two, right, that make up that other area. So we clustered those into one column and then separated them out from greater Minnesota. What we were wondering is, our theory was that we know that there's no way to keep the information we've done exclusive to Dakota and Ramsey County, partly because the majority of affiliated clinics that sat outside of our two-county region sat in the other five counties. I mean, there were some in greater Minnesota, but barely. And we know that the clinician population is a very fluid population, so they go between clinics. They're not going to stick just to their clinics within those two counties, whereas we figured they're probably not quite as fluid with greater Minnesota. So interestingly, if you look at Dakota and the other metro area, we see quite a large increase in percent change between 2006-2007, whereas in greater Minnesota, there's quite a bit of a decrease. Ramsey County has a little bit of a decrease. However, there are about 30 cases outstanding yet that they're still investigating for 2007, and that would definitely change those numbers a little bit. So, lessons learned. Prepare for a very labor-intensive process. We didn't appreciate how labor-intensive this process was going to be. I do think, so far, it's paid off. Convene an advisory group. That advisory group, and I've heard that mentioned throughout the session the last couple of days, that's really going to help you, especially if you're going to make it up of your college health services, of your school health services, clinics, hospitals, because they're really going to be the ones to tell you whether or not the project you're trying to implement is going to work. And also, they're great for helping to establish some of those champions at the different clinics. And recruit champions, because really, having one point person when you're trying to follow up or encourage participation and maintain participation, it helps to have that person there. And I know I've heard that actually mentioned a couple times too over the last couple of days. Be flexible and understand the site's needs and internal protocol Each clinic varies in which staff fills out forms, which staff can perform procedures. Sometimes it was the MD, sometimes it was the PA, and sometimes it was the lab staff. Whether or not a site has electronic or paper reporting, what their relationships with labs are they internal, external, affiliated? All of these will influence the workflow within a site. It is important that projects be aware of potential differences, not only in order for a project to accommodate a variety of healthcare settings, but also so the project coordinator knows enough about the site to have the flexibility to troubleshoot at the very beginning stages of recruitment. This is really key. So rather than them just saying, there's no way this is going to work, you can already say, well, yes, but. Maintain consistent contact in order to keep the project on the forefront, and be aware of staffing changes at the site. Consistent contact is achieved through monitoring quality of reporting and testing. However, it can also be achieved through other program avenues, which saves time, money, and also promotes an integrated front on behalf of public health. And develop an exit strategy. This is actually something we're still struggling with as we're trying to deal with the issues around providing free PCR testing, especially to low and no-cost clinics, and then taking that away at the end of this project. Expanded benefits of active surveillance. Healthcare providers are more aware of available public health services through our communication. We actually were able to let one of the colleges know about some influenza preparedness that was going on at the state level. Tdap vaccine has been promoted through clinics, hospitals, schools, and parent groups. Relationships between educational, medical, and public health professionals have been improved. Two success stories. So, a St. Paul Community Clinic physician who was evaluating a 16-year-old for cough illnesses collected and submitted an NP specimen through our MDH lab and reported the suspect case through PASS. So the same day she collected it, she also faxed us a form, sent it with a specimen. The physician acknowledged that testing would not likely have occurred without the project. And this teen, along with a sibling and a parent, were all three laboratory confirmed cases. So these are three cases we would have never have picked up without this project. And this actually happened right after we had done the in-service and training. The second one is an active surveillance clinic physician with a cough illness was prompted to be tested for pertussis after noticing our Think, Test, Treat, Stop Transmission poster. She'd been going around coughing, not really thinking too much of it, saw the poster and thought, pertussis. Was tested, was positive, and knowing the diagnosis, the physician was treated and avoided possible additional exposures. So I'd like to give some acknowledges. Kim Moore is my coworker at the Minnesota Department of Health and has definitely really supported this project and pulled my weight too when I was on maternity leave for a couple months. and then County Project Coordinator Sharon Lynch, who's actually with us here today, and then Jane Dietzman, who wasn't able to make it.